Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Ben's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself, Jay and Buster will go over the 2-1 defeat to St Johnstone on Saturday, reflecting an improved performance at Dingwall where we recorded a 3-1 win. We'll also be joined by Louis Moe and Chris Cadden, the winners of both the Podcast Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year, respectively. How are we, guys?
Aye, not bad.
Aye, very good, thanks.
Good to hear it. Well, Buster, we'll start with the St Johnstone game. And it was pretty much end of season fair, I suppose. We made a strong start. Scott McDonald scored within 4 minutes. But after that, the game didn't really get going, did it?
No, not for us anyway, no. As you says, you started pretty well. You know, it was a kind of decent game at that point. Even when St Johnstone scored, it was, you know, to make it 1-1, it was still, you know, a pretty decent game. But it sort of died for there, and then, you know, St Johnstone scored again in the second half, which was just utter abysmal, to be honest with you. It was just one of those games, and to be fair, I wasn't even paying much attention to before. I was just chatting away, you know, to Craig Kennedy and that, who was sitting next to me. But as I say, it was, as you say, very much a sort of another post-season friendly sort of effort.
Jay, I know you didn't make the game, but it could have come as a little surprise after witnessing a disappointing display at Pittodrie the week before, that we were pretty abject and off the pace, because by all accounts, that's exactly what we were like at Pittodrie.
I don't know about that. Obviously, I was, you know, I thankfully stopped spewing long enough to actually listen to Open All Mics and Watch Soccer Saturday. But I think, although the Aberdeen game was pretty disappointing, and we obviously spoke about how there was that kind of mediocre end-of-season feel to it, I still felt, you know, I said last week, I still felt that the particular game against St Johnstone, there was still a chance to make it an unbelievable season as far as we're concerned. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's still a fantastic season to finish fifth, of course it is. But from where we were when McGee came in, you know, fourth was still very much on the agenda. If we had, you know, beaten St Johnstone, obviously, you know, with hindsight, no, I don't think MD expected St Johnstone to go to Celtic and win anyway. So, you know, it might still have been, you know, up for grabs anyway. I was expecting St Johnstone perhaps to lose the last two games, but, you know, if we'd went and beat St Johnstone on Saturday, then we could really have been looking to finish fourth. What a fantastic achievement that would have been. And to go ahead 1-0 in a game like that, I think you should be quite disappointed that you've not went on and got a result out of the game. These kind of games, it is easy to sort of dismiss as being end of season and, oh, well, you know, we've finished fifth anyway. But these are professional football players we're talking about. They're players earning a good wage. And, you know, as I said, I haven't seen the game, so I would like to think that we were beaten by the better team in the day and St Johnstone deserved to finish fourth rather than finishing fifth, because on Saturday we just weren't really that interested.
Yes, I suppose to a certain degree that's been proven to be unfair, that the players had down tools, because obviously they went into Dingwall last night and recorded a very good victory. There was the majority of the talking points actually took place off the park on Saturday, even nearly overshadowing the podcast Player of the Year awards presentation after the match. But there was a lot of output from Motherwell through the week about the consequences of a pitch invasion at the St Johnstone game, something that's been a tradition at Fir Park in the last game of the season for as long as I can remember, certainly. I don't know when it began or if there's any real kind of logic behind it, but anyway, regardless of that, there was a steward's presence like I've never seen before at Fir Park. We arrived at the stadium round about the back of 12, and two sections in the upper tier of the south stand were taken up by stewards being briefed. 10 minutes to go in the game, the hordes emerged. It was very unsettling, really, for a Motherwell St Johnstone game, which, to my knowledge, has never attracted any sort of bother in the past. This was absolute overkill to the extreme. So much so that you saw a lot of people leaving before the players came back out to take their lap of honour, as they always do in the final home game of the season. Buster, I know the club had to be seen to be doing something, but it just seems like they've went completely daft in this one.
Well, I don't... You're right, there was complete overkill, and the club himself have said, you know, it was complete overkill, but I don't think they were left with many options, to be fair. The, you know, the 18-month suspended sentence or whatever it is we've got, basically, if MD had set foot in the park, it was, you know, it was going to end badly for the club. So I don't think they really had any sort of other choice, to be fair. You know, people leaving before the players come out, that's up to them. I've seen people talk about how they weren't able to cheer McGee around the park and stuff like that as well. So, you know, I think there was other petty reasons for that as well. One thing, obviously, as you say, you know, we were in the south stand. One thing I didn't see at the time was, I've seen mentions of it, you know, on the forums and stuff, was some sort of netting or mesh or something that was up somewhere. Denny's know anything about that?
Well, obviously I wasn't at the game, so my view on the whole thing might be slightly different because I'm looking at it externally, but, you know, we can talk about it in a bit. But in terms of the plastic netting, I saw photos of it, but on Open All Mics they were in stitches while it was happening. They described it as being like a Justin Bieber concert, and they were in utter hysterics at this, you know, the sight of an absolute army of loomy yellow stewards carrying what appeared to be, like, you know, wee diddy plastic barriers out.
Yeah, it looked to me like almost something that you would see at a kid's farm.
I think you mean a farm that kids go to and not a farm of kids.
Yeah, well, both, I suppose, but they would have barely kept out rabbits from running through if they were to make an honour. The thing is, I completely stand by the club protecting the possibilities of a massive fine. Who knows whether there could have been actually a points deduction or anything else. They've obviously been threatened with severe consequences to take such drastic actions, and if that's the case, then completely commend them for being very thorough. But I just wonder, do you think it could be the circumstances or the situation here that people are put off attending? I've seen a few talking about how there won't be renewing season tickets and everything else. Yes, it's not like football fans to overreact, but at a time where the club need people to be going through the gate and giving them maximum revenue, that's a wee bit of concern there.
I'm torn on the whole thing. The way I kind of see it, and again, having not been there, it might be, you know, my viewpoint is completely different because I'm looking at it, I suppose, from the outside. Maybe if I'd been there and I'd witnessed that, I would have been a bit more raging about all these stewards. But I kind of see it as being an overreaction met by an overreaction. From the photos and from what I've been told, I think that it does look a bit ridiculous. When you're sitting listening to Open All Mics and they are all in hysterics of what's going on at Fir Park, then it is a bit cringeworthy. It is a bit embarrassing. I think when you have preceded the game with so much in the way of, you know, advertising and giving advice and raising awareness, you know, in the programme, you know, Flo was on the radio before the game. When you put such a massive effort into telling people to stay off the pitch and then put those measures in place, I think it should be one or the other. You know, it's kind of treating the fans a bit like idiots, you know, almost like we will tell you not to go in the park and then we will still not trust you enough and so we'll do all that. For me, it could be one or the other. So it is overkill. I don't think there's any denying that it was complete overkill. But, you know, we obviously will never know just how much of it was overkill because it had to be and how much of it was the club going overboard. But I think the reaction's been, you know, completely knee-jerk as well. At the end of the day, it was an end-of-season game. Yes, it was slightly embarrassing. It was slightly cringeworthy. The journalists certainly had a right good laugh at us. The club have got away with not having a fine, presumably. Presumably the fine they would have got would have been more than the tens of thousands they probably spent on the measures. The fans, who probably wouldn't have went on the park anyway because they were told not to, went to the game, then went home. I think it's a complete overreaction to start talking about not going back and not renewing season tickets and all this kind of thing. There is a problem, we've discussed it time and time again, with heavy-handed stewards, with the Act being, you know, not good legislation, the police being heavy-handed at times as well. But I think something like this has to be just put aside as the club overreacting because they felt they had to. It's a one-off. Probably won't happen again. And the one bugbear I do have is the idea that the pitch invasion is a tradition. A tradition just means that it's something that people do, like, time and time again. It doesn't mean anything. You know, we play sevens on a Thursday night. That's just because we want to play Thursday and sevens at night. It's not a, you know, on a Thursday night, it's not a tradition. Just because people decide they want to go in the park at the end of the game, calling it a tradition doesn't make it any more legitimate or any more, you know, acceptable. At the end of the day, this all boils down to fans acting a way they shouldn't have against Rangers. The club have felt that they've had to react in a way. They've completely overreacted. The fans have completely overreacted. And it's all just a bit of a farce.
I think to be fair as well, it's an overreaction from, you know, the SFA or the SPFL or whatever, you know, whoever it is that sort of sets these sanctions. Well, who was going to possibly put these sanctions in place if we did, you know, step out of line again? Because, as you said, everything just appears to be an overreaction for an overreaction for an overreaction. I think the club were quite right in what they've done, to be honest with you. I don't have any problem with it. I never seen the, you know, the plastic ram or whatever it is they took out with them. To be honest with you, I wasn't really paying much attention. I never even noticed it. But I don't have any problem with the fact that the club did put so much into promoting the fact that they didn't want us on the park. And then, or the stewards, because I feel they were backed into a corner and, you know, they had to do something basically so that, as again, as I say, the SFA or the SPFL, whoever it is, you know, that was looking at these things, we have to be seen to be making an effort. And it's all right saying, you know, they could have looked at, you know, the flyers or the radio promotion, things like that. But that just was, you know, the stewards as well, part of that as well. I don't have any problem with the club actually, you know, showing that they were making it 10 times the effort they probably should have to keep us off the mark. But as you says, any talk of not going back and stuff like that because of that, it's fairly stupid in my opinion.
I understand both sides. I mean, if I'd been there, you know, obviously if I'd made it, because obviously I was ill, but if I'd made it and I'd been in hospitality with you guys, I probably wouldn't really have noticed it either. If I'd been in the stand where we normally stand, then I probably would have been, you know, a bit pissed off about it. I probably would have been looking at it thinking, what is this? You know, why are we being treated like this? I think that it does give the perception when you tell someone and you put that much effort into telling people, look, you can't go in the park, it's just not going to happen. When you then go to the measures that we did, it does suggest a lack of trust. It does suggest that, you know, you're being treated as though you're an idiot. So I kind of understand that. But then on the flip side, time and time again, this so-called tradition has shown that the fans can't really be trusted when it comes to staying off the park. So although it was, it's a delicate situation just because of all the chat about heavy-handed police and stewarding and all that as well, unfortunately. The club are in a lose-lose situation. there is literally nothing I think that the club could have been that could have done that wouldn't have been, you know, criticised afterwards. I think maybe wee plastic barriers and all that is stretching it a little bit, but you know, again, the club felt that they had to do something. They've done it. It was a bit of a farce. They had a right good laugh about it in the radio, because it was so laughable. Some fans are annoyed, and by the start of the Euros, everybody will have forgotten about it.
Yeah, I certainly hope that's the case, because I know you, to go way back to your point about tradition, that was possibly, for the want of a better word, but I suppose it has been happening on a yearly basis. There's never something that's particularly appealed to me. I've been on the park before, when we're generally, I quite like giving the players the recognition for their efforts over the course of the season. Even last season, when they had been absolutely abysmal for the majority of it, but that's something I like seeing the players. And you can, also, from speaking to guys like Louis Moult on Saturday, he was saying that we get absolutely loved being on the park and getting to experience that. And despite the fact that he's only 2 or 3 years of age, that's something that you will remember and you'll be able to look back on as a very special moment. So you wouldn't want us to go back to the days where the players had to stand in the main stand and look over and everyone's standing at the dugout for fear they were going to have every item of clothing ripped off them. It all just seems a bit much. And I know that across the UK there was pitch invasions at the weekend there when Middlesbrough went up or when teams have had avoided relegation, but if it is a tradition, then for me it's quite an outdated idea.
Well, I think the main thing that kind of gets lost in this whole argument, not just on here, but when you read it on Twitter and stuff, it's kind of back and forward. I noticed that Alan Burrows was obviously tweeting quite, I mean, fair play to him, you know, I mean, he was tweeting quite extensively immediately after the game, answering the criticism, you know, answering questions about it, trying to put forward the club's point of view. And it seems to be this kind of back and forward between the fans and the club. The real culprits here are those who make the decisions regarding fans on the park. There is absolutely nothing wrong with fans running on the park. If the fans run on the park at full time and then the Tannoy announcement, you know, says please remove yourself from the park so the players can do the lap on or whatever, and then the fans go off, you know, there we go. You know, I know I'm slating it, you know, the idea that it's a tradition. I don't like that idea because it's nonsense, but you know, the idea of fans running on the park, yeah, it happens. You know, you see it, as you said, you saw it in Sky Sports News and Soccer Saturday and stuff all over. English football, folk are running the park and it's no big deal. So the issue here isn't really the club. It's quite an awkward situation, the fact that we have, once again, this kind of, you know, a line drawn between a lot of fans and the club. When it's the folk making these stupid rules in the first place. Okay, you're not allowed in the park. But if folk run in the park because of the emotion or because it's the last day of the season, then get off it again, just use some common sense. Accept that it happens. You know, a wee rap in the wrist or whatever, fair enough. Okay, the Rangers game was a bit different. It was televised. There was a bit of goading between fans that was never going to really escalate further than that. But I think the real, you know, the real criticism here should be for the folk that run the game and make these daft rules up, rather than a club that felt as though they had to make the make these measures in the first place, or the fans getting annoyed about it. It's the SPFL, the police, the SFA, whoever it is that sits down and comes up with these, you know, really, really stupid idea that, you know, a couple of fans running on the park is worth, you know, whatever much fine it is. It's absolutely stupid.
We'll move on from this one just now, but I think maybe as a closing on it, the Buster possibly summed it up best when he said that the club were backed into a corner. And I'd say that's possibly the most apt way to describe it, because the club have had to be seen to be doing something. They have. It's not suited everyone, of course, but we move on, and I hope that anyone that was inconvenienced by the stewards and I wouldn't say overzealous nature, just the overreaction, we'll still be back at Fir Park next season, and I'm sure the vast majority will be.
So after the Saints game, we were joined by Louis Moult, who discussed his hopes for next season, reflected on a fantastic first season at Fir Park, looked ahead to the final two games of the season, and also described his hope for England at the European Championships, something that we didn't all quite share.
Well, after presenting him with his Player of the Year award on Saturday, we're delighted to welcome along Louis Moult for a wee chat about his award and about his summer plans and then his hopes and expectations ahead of next season. Louis, thanks for joining us.
That's all, mate. Thanks for having me.
We're actually recording for the second time because we did record earlier on and it didn't work. Louis, it was a disappointing game on Saturday, but it must have been nice to pick up your award and receive a bit of recognition for what has been a good season for the club and a great season for you personally, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was a disappointing game. I thought we were poor, especially in the second half. But yeah, it was nice to have a nice reception from the fans after the game. And, you know, it meant a lot to me, especially with my little one coming on the pitch as well. And she seemed to really enjoy it. So and the fans were fantastic. So yeah, it was a nice moment for myself.
And of course, the season isn't quite over yet. A trip to Ross County tomorrow evening and then a big occasion, I suppose, the final game of the season at Celtic Park, where Celtic will be crowned champions. It's sure to be a big crowd at the game. That'll be something I'm not sure if you've experienced before, kind of almost being there to spoil the party for a team receiving the league title.
Yeah, well, you know, we've got two games left, two difficult games. We lost 3-0 at Ross County when we went earlier on in the season, so we'll be looking to try and get a win at Ross County and then trying to spoil, like you say, spoil Celtic's party on Sunday. You know, it'll be a first for me, you know, by atmosphere, which, you know, everyone will be looking forward to, but for us, Mobile, people will be there to try and spoil the party, like I've just mentioned.
The Aberdeen games and St Johnstone games have been a disappointing blip after a great run of form since the beginning of March. Is there any reason you can kind of pinpoint for the dip in performance in the last couple of games?
I'd probably say, you know, a bit of fatigue going on in the squad. That the boys have strung themselves out for a number of weeks now, and you know, I think there's a few tired legs amongst the boys. So we're certainly looking forward to the break. Now we're in that top six and we're safe, and we've ended up on the whole having a good season. But yeah, the last two games haven't been great, so we need to try and make at least get some points out of these last two games.
The summer break obviously quickly approaching. Do you have plans to get away to get some downtime away from football? I know as someone with a young family that must be very important and very special times for you to have a break from football and put it on the back burner for a short while.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'll be on my feet up and going abroad with the family and enjoying some family time with them, resting more than anything, if I'm honest. And I'll be watching the Euros as well.
Have you got high hopes for England side's chances this summer?
Nothing. Bonus of England at the minute. So if they can win it, well, it'd be fantastic to witness.
I'm not sure I agree. Louis, it's been tremendous watching you this season. A fantastic season. Really great turnaround for the club as well towards the end of the season. Looking forward to next season, I'm sure. And have you got any kind of hopes and expectations for the next term?
Not really. Not just yet. You know, I'm still focusing on the next two games more than anything. But, you know, we need to try and finish in that top six again next season. You know, we firmly believed at the start of this season that we could finish in the top six. It wasn't looking likely earlier on in the season. We generally thought, and everyone probably thought, that we were going to be in a relegation battle. But, you know, we never give up, and we showed some fantastic spirit and went on an unbelievable run at the right time. And ended up in fourth spot, you know, and it just shows what we are capable of, and I'm sure we can repeat that next season.
I hope so, mate. Thank you very much for your time, and I know it's been a bit of a stop-start evening trying to get this sorted, so I very much appreciate it. Have a great summer, and we'll speak to you soon, hopefully, okay?
No worries, mate. Thanks.
Last night, we had a game. It seems a bit strange because none of us were there, and there wasn't really much of a build-up to it either. But an excellent 3 points at Dingwall, a 3-1 winning margin. Jay, I just didn't see it coming. A very strange start in 11 where guys like Bergaro Gomez and Stephen Pearson were preferred to younger players such as Jack Leach, who is fighting for a new contract. I think it might be a clear indication that Jack Leach won't be at Fir Park next season. The fact that he was instead benched and didn't even get on, as far as I'm aware. But a great result, and Mark McGill fairly vindicated on his start in 11.
Well, no. I mean, obviously, there's 2 points there. The first one is obviously a great victory. You know, I suppose it is slightly unexpected because after, you know, going up to Pittodrie and getting horsed, and then from what you guys are saying, you know, quite an abject performance against St Johnstone, perhaps just when you thought, right, tools are downed, you know, we'll be lucky to finish fifth, suddenly we go to Ross County and get a great win. So that's fantastic. You know, fifth is still, as I said earlier, still a fantastic achievement. You know, a really, really good win. In terms of the lineup, I was really disappointed before it to find out that Gomez was starting. I still am. I don't buy that this a particular decision like that, you know, winning the game means it's vindicated. I think I'm right in saying that it's already been confirmed that both Ripley and Gomez will go back to their parent clubs. So there is literally no reason I can think of whatsoever for Morgado Gomez to be playing for Motherwell at the moment. When you factor in the fact that we do have players leaving, so we are going to have to bring in younger players next season. When you factor in, as you said, the likes of somebody like Jack Leach, is presumably still in McGee's thinking if he's on the bench, so may still be, you know, looking to fight for a new deal. When you factor in the fact that the under-20s have had a great season and have just won the Cup, I just find it absolutely baffling that Gomez got a start last night. I don't want to, you know, sound negative. It was a great victory. But the one thing that stands out for me, that it is an absolutely ludicrous decision to play him when he's not going to be here. All they are essentially doing is keeping him match fit for some bizarre reason. An absolutely baffling decision. But in saying that, the same token, a great win. And fifth place, you know, as much as... As I don't like McGee personally, and as much as there still is this weird kind of for and anti-McGee sentiment in the Motherwell support, you cannot deny that Mark McGee has been absolutely phenomenal since he came in. And, you know, what a finish to the season and what a result.
Buster, that's an element that kind of frustrated me slightly, the fact that as soon as there's a kind of controversial team selection or a decision has to be made and the supporters believe it to be a wrong one, the knives are quite regularly out for Mark McGee. And it's almost as if some people take a bit of adverse pleasure in seeing a manager struggle at times. I completely get what Jay's saying in terms of the under-20s success. It was, for me, possibly the highlight of the season, a fantastic achievement, and there's definitely some guys in that team that I've got the potential to go on and at least compete for a place in the first team. But there might have been kind of pressures from above here as well, given the financial impact of finishing in fifth place. And that's obviously what we've managed to achieve by going up there and winning last night.
Well, yeah, I mean, as Jay says, you know, we were all sitting chatting away in the wee group chat, and when we seen the lineup, I think we were all kind of disappointed that Morgado Gomez was starting for some reason. You know, we all sort of basically went through exactly what Jay was saying there. You know, there's younger players, there's people wanting, you know, possibly fighting still for their future at the club, so it'd be ideal to get them in. And, you know, I think at the time I said, the only thing I can think of is he's obviously want to consolidate as high up as he can. And you know, this is what he thinks his best team would be, and you know, I can understand Jay's point completely as well. You know, that there's no real point in him playing. We've got players in the team who possibly could do a similar job. But if McGee and the management team think that Morgado Gomez is the best man to step into that position at that time, you know, it's they're the guys that see these players every day. McGee, management team, Robinson, whoever else, they watch these players day in, day out. You know, and they've obviously decided that this is how we're going to set up, which was kind of a weird setup for us anyway. I think, you know, I don't exactly know how it played, but I think it was, despite, you know, what Jay says, I think it was sort of semi-vindicated the fact that we quite comfortably won the game. So as you say, it's disappointing to see that, you know, maybe guys like Jack Leach are not getting a chance to, you know, to see if they can maybe win a contract for next year or whatever. But I don't think you can fault it, you know, when we are winning. And as you said as well, you know, as soon as the team was announced, you know, you were on your Twitters and your Facebooks and whatever, and there was, as you say, the nice route immediately for McGee. It's not nice, but there is a certain element of your support who, no matter what the guy seems to do, they're just not going to take them. You know, that's fine. There's no, you know, I'm not suggesting everybody has to love him, but it'll not surprise me if we don't do so well. You know, if these people are immediately on his back, you know, calling for a sack come the start of next season.
Can I just say though that the problem is that I completely agree. There are those who, like myself, dislike McGee for whatever reason, but take it a step too far and do kind of circle with vultures and look for a reason. You know, certain things they perhaps pick up on that aren't, you know, particularly true or minor things. But I think that a lot of the chat now from the other side is in danger of just kind of dismissing any criticism as that. At the end of the day, if Stuart McCall, if Ian Barraclough, if Tommy McLean had decided to play Morgado Gomez last night, I would have said it was an absolutely baffling, bizarre and all-round shite decision. It's got absolutely nothing to do with Mark McGee. So the idea that because folk were criticising the team selection in the aftermath of it being announced is somehow linked to some anti-McGee, you know, sentiment, I think it's a bit unfair. I think it's all very well.
Often he's mentioned personally in these messages. That's what my point is.
But I mean, at the end of the day, it's you're in danger of just dismissing any criticism of lineups, of, you know, of anything Mark McGee related, because it's just people who don't like Mark McGee. At the end of the day, I don't agree with Buster that Gomez was, you know, the best player for the position. I know Buster's not saying he personally thought that, but anybody who watched Morgado Gomez play for Motherwell since he came in knows he's been absolutely shit. So the idea that there is nothing can convince me that Morgado Gomez should have started last night, even if we'd went on and won 7-0. It's a very short-termist, you know, lineup. There is no thought to progress. There is no thought to next season. There is no thought to youth. There is no thought to the guys who are trying to win a new deal. For me, it was a terrible decision to make. It's not really a big deal. We won the game. We move on. We've got a manager who's doing a great job. But I think that there are those who hate McGee with a passion. It's quite cringeworthy at times. Some of the chants that we've heard in particular, down our end, you know, just from a very, very small minority, are, you know, there's absolutely tragic part of. But I think that when you go the other way and just start dismissing very legitimate criticisms of lineups because it's deemed as being anti-Mark McGee, I think that just becomes a farce as well.
Oh, it's a difficult one, but I'd say that there's quite a lot tweets last night that were, I didn't really get bothered with the missus because she thought I was tweeting at her. But it's just boring. It's almost as if, and it's a constant as well. When Gomez came in, I think the majority of us looked at it as an experienced SPL player that would bring something to our midfield. At that point, Louis Lang was completely out of the picture. He's kind of, his muscles come in handy, and particularly in that good run of form that started in March. Jack Leach was nowhere near the setup, and McGee had said that he didn't feel he was quite ready. So, but even then, it was, that's Mark McGee dismissing you. The successes of Ben Hall and Chris Cadden, for me, have been a lot down to Mark McGee's leadership. With a manager previously who was a hell of a lot more popular than Mark McGee is or ever will be, I would reckon. And he never seemed to acknowledge the youth set up, and overlooked young players for the majority of his time at Fir Park. Ian Barraclough, again, didn't often opt with young players. McGee, on occasion, has actually just thrown them in and given them their opportunities. And in the instance of Ben Hall and Chris Cadden, both of them have flourished.
I'm certainly not disagreeing with anything you're saying. You know, my problems with McGee are just that I don't particularly take to what I deem as being, you know, his ego and his arrogance. It's not a big deal. I don't, you know, rant and rave about him or anything like that. Yes, when we talk about it, I'll mention it because it's relevant. I've not got any issues with it. I will, you know, if there's issues with lineups and things like that, I'll pick them apart. It's what we do as football fans. I just think that we are getting to this very kind of narrow-minded, black and white scenario here, where if, you know, everybody is either against McGee or for him, and, you know, if you say anything, you know, lineups and stuff, oh my God, you must hate McGee, it's because of McGee. I just think that there's a lot of grey area there. There is a lot of legitimate arguments against things that McGee have done, whether it's at Tynecastle with his lineup, whether it's with certain things, you know, the perception that he hung Ainsworth out to dry, the lineup, you know, giving Gomez a game. I agree, when we signed Gomez, I was quite pleased. I really rated him, particularly when he was in the midfield at Dundee United. I thought he was a great wee player. I was really looking forward to seeing him. But he's been a complete disappointment. We've already accepted we're sending him back, and there's no reason to play him. It's as simple as that. Couldn't care less who the manager is. Okay, there might be certain folk who maybe throw in a wee dig here or there because they actually have strong feelings against McGee, but it doesn't take away from the very legitimate and very acceptable point that they're making. And I think that it becomes a bit of a farce when it's basically a case of you either accept everything he does, or if you've got any criticism against him, then you must be anti-McGee. There is a lot of grey area in there where he is like anybody else in football. He is allowed to be criticised, and it doesn't mean that you are anti the manager.
I think what you say is very, very true. You know, as you mentioned, those things where we've all criticised them for, Tynecastle, Ross County away, you know, where Marvin Johnson was at left back. Again, Marvin Johnson was at left back against St. Johnstone as well. And, you know, when I seen that, I wasn't very pleased either. Turned that he had a not bad game, to be fair. But, I don't think anybody's suggesting that you have to either love him or hate him. I know that's where it's maybe coming across as, but I just want to put it out there, that's certainly not what I'm suggesting. I just think that there is too many people, you know, maybe even one person is too many people, but there's too many people who are just waiting on things to go wrong, in my opinion, so that they can basically start hounding them. And again, you know, as I say, when things go wrong, managers will get hounded. You know, if it goes so wrong, I'll probably be hounding them as well. But the fact is, it doesn't seem to get any credit when it's due from a lot of people. And as I say, as soon as there's one wee thing that people are unhappy with or doesn't go right, you know, there's a lot of people just waiting there to pounce. And, you know, I don't think it's right, especially, you know, when from where we were to where we are, as you said as well, Jay, you know, we've done very well, and hopefully we'll continue to do as well, if not better.
You know, I think, though, I mean, maybe not to this extent because it's a unique situation because he's came back a second time, but the idea of football fans just circling and hanging about like a bizarre lynch mob because they don't like the manager, waiting for an excuse to pounce. Do you not think that just happens with every manager? It happened with McCall. There were folk who just didn't take to McCall at all. It certainly happened with Barraclough. Within about 2 weeks of Barraclough joining, there was a thread in Steelmen Online that was just sort of gleefully added to every time he cocked up. This idea that somehow there's some kind of, you know, anti-McGee underworld or gang or something like that. I think that, yes, it's a bit more vocal and it's a bit more perhaps at times vicious because there is, you know, perceived injustices and there is a bit of bad blood there because of previous experience. But I think there's a lot of generalisations and a lot of kind of making a mountain out of a molehill here. I think that the idea that certain fans don't like a manager and wait for reasons to attack them is just par for the course. It happens with players, it happens with referees, it happens with managers. And I think that, you know, again, during all this, I think that there's a danger that very legitimate points are kind of, you know, swept aside or glossed over because people are too obsessed with this idea of foreign anti-McGee. At the end of the day, he's a manager. People don't like him. And naturally, they will then you know, pouncing things that he does wrong perhaps a bit too quickly, just like they did with Barakov, just like they did with McCall, and just like they've done with every manager before.
I don't know if you're busted, but that sounded like the words of someone trying to hide their underworld activity. The Mark McGee gang.
That's it.
The first rule of the gang is you don't speak about the gang.
A real slip up there.
You know, see, I'll be in the Clyde next week now.
Last game of the season, Sunday, visit to Celtic Park for what is promising to be possibly one of the least enthusiastic title celebrations that have ever taken place in Scottish football history, I reckon. Even their own fans don't seem to think that they particularly deserved the trophy, but I suppose over the 37 games, if you've got the most points, they're going into the 38, they can't be caught, they're the champions, and no doubt in the next couple of days we'll hear the patter about the Guard of Honour and everything else. I think we should just go on with it, clap them onto the park, and then hopefully put them in their place for the second time at their own place this season.
Sounds like a good plan, as you say. You know, there's going to be, you know, the Guard on and clap on at the park. Fair enough. I don't really see much any chat about the Celtic game last night, but you know, or the night before, whatever night it was. Sorry, but the they didn't seem to be trying from what my mate who was watching them was telling me. Then they scored the goal. Then they got beat simply. And his attitude as well as a Celtic supporter was, the league's done, who cares, you know. So maybe if they turn up like that in Sunday, we'll maybe get another Loom Oak double and a wee 2-1-1 or something like that. But again, I think it's going to be another one of those end of season, you know, kickabouts. There's nothing really to play for, you know, other than maybe a decent win bonus for probably both sets of the players. But I think, you know, we can all start our wee arguments when Margaro Gomez is in the first team lineup.
Jay, I spoke to Louis Moll earlier on in the week before we actually had a trip to Ross County, and he was saying that he thought one of the biggest factors that they'd be dipping for him, the loss at Pittodrie and the loss against St Johnstone, was down to the players having almost overexpanded themselves to make sure that they avoided being sucked into the playoff battle and then subsequently to finish in the top six. For me, that's perfectly understandable. But looking at the squad at times, I think when we trimmed a lot of the deadwood in January, we were then operating well, more within our means. And as when guys are playing 36, 37 games in the league and then on top of that cup and cup fixtures as well, they are going to get tired. They deserve their break, and it's been a season that when we look back on it in next week's podcast, I think it will be with a fair degree of fondness.
Oh, absolutely. As I said earlier, I think, you know, when we're doing this, you're kind of, obviously you are still looking at the whole picture and long term, but, you know, we're commenting in the aftermath of games, and there's no denying that, you know, going up on the megabus up to Aberdeen to watch us getting horsed is disappointing, and you know, you guys going along to St Johnstone and it being a defeat, you obviously feel a wee bit negative about it, but there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that finishing fifth this season is an absolutely phenomenal achievement. It would be interesting to actually maybe go back and listen to a couple of podcasts around that time when Barraclough was on his last legs and just listen to how perhaps doom and gloom it might have been and compare it to, you know, sitting fifth now and being annoyed that we just got beat 2-1 after St Johnstone to go fourth. It's been some season. It's been a phenomenal turnaround, great performances throughout the team. I'd still like to think we could go to Celtic Park and do something on Sunday. Already got my ticket, which is a bit daft. The only reason I'm really going, I suppose, is because I'm on route to the airport to go down to London. It's not a place I tend to like going, like most Motherwell fans. But, you know, as their game against St Johnstone showed, and as we showed earlier in the season, they're a poor team. I think Celtic running away with the title this year just highlights nothing other than the differences in budgets. Celtic could have won the league this year with one of us in charge, I think, just purely down to budget. The only reason they've won this is because they've got a bigger budget. As a team, they're poor. You know, any team that Effie Ambrose can get a game for is unbelievable. I doubt he'll play on Sunday. If he does, then we've got a chance, because I saw he gave another howler against St Johnstone. So I'm looking forward to the game. It's one of those games now, very rarely you can go to Celtic Park and really not care. As much as you go and kind of expect to get beat, there's usually points to play for, and you know, it's relevant because it's a league or a cup tie, whereas Sunday, we've finished fifth for the great season, can kind of go along, see what's what, and just kind of see the players for the last time, and of course in certain players, the likes of Ripley, and perhaps a few others, depending on what happens with their futures, it might be the last time we see them in Motherwell jerseys. So it'll be a good day, just purely because we have had such a great season, and the context of where we were when McGee came in.
Yeah, I don't think there's a great deal to add to that. The pressure is off, but there will be a huge television audience, a almost sold out Celtic Park, I'm sure. There will be, the eyes will be on Celtic, but if we could spoil the party a bit, which we've got a fair habit of doing at times, that'd be very nice to see.
I think that, you know, what Jay said in the middle, what he was saying was, you know, rung so true, the fact that Celtic won the league solely because they have got a bigger budget. Don't get me wrong, it's happened in the past constantly, and it'll constantly happen, but the fact that, you know, they picked up Scott Allen and the boy, Ryan Christie from Inverness, you know, they were two other teams. I know Scott Allen was playing with Hibs, but two other teams, sort of best players, they picked them up. I don't know why, to be honest with you, because I don't think any of them has had as much as a start. I think there's been a few substitute appearances between them. But, you know, as you say, it goes to show the budget's where it's at, and it's kind of a sad, you know, reflection on Scottish football, I think.
Guys, I'd started to remember well question at the weekend that kind of got lost and amongst various other things we're doing. I think we'll roll that one over till the final podcast of the season, which will be recorded around the back end of next week before we take a what I would describe as a well-earned break from podcasting. We'll do a few summer specials and not allow you to forget about us, but apart from that, it'll be pretty much Monday nights to ourselves for a wee while. Unless there's anything else you can think of discussing, then we'll wrap it up for this week.
No, I'm just about to go and have my weekly underground Mark McGee haters meeting.
Yeah, just watch out for any strangers chapping your door, and just stay safe at Celtic Park, because basically everyone knows now.
So we'll finish this week with an interview with Chris Cadden, which took place after the Ross County game. So we'll preview this weekend's game against Celtic, discuss a breakthrough season for Chris, the under-20s, fantastic success in the Scottish Youth Cup. Guys, thanks very much for this week. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back at the back end of next week to review the 2015-2016 season. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Delighted to welcome along tonight at a very unearthly hour, Chrissy Cadden, the MFC Young Player of the Year. Chris, firstly, congratulations on your award and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no bother at all. Appreciate you having me. Thanks a lot.
Firstly, as I say, congratulations on a great season. It's been a bit of a whirlwind the last couple of months for you, with the breakthrough into the first team, and you become a mainstay there, and then to cap the season off, a fantastic win as you captained the Motherwell under-20s to victory at Hampden.
Yeah, 2016 has been a pretty good year for me. Absolutely really enjoyed it. It's exceeded all my expectations, but it's just good to see that so I've worked hard, so it's good to see my hard work's paying off, and hopefully just keep working hard, maybe more of the same along the way. But as you said, winning Youth Cup was with the 20s boys, absolutely brilliant. Playing at Hampden as well was something I'll never forget, so it's been brilliant. Obviously made my breakthrough in the first team, it's been good. Appreciate Gaffer giving me the chance, and just had to grab it with both hands, and hopefully next season I can kick on.
We'll talk about the team in more detail in just a wee bit, but the 20s, I've already said when we recorded earlier on tonight that I would say that's like my highlight of the season. It was an absolutely brilliant night. The fans really got behind the team, and it was so clear how much it meant to the boys going on to win the trophy. You and Ben Hall broke through at similar times into the first team, and Mark McGee's shown that he will give the young guys a chance if he believes they're good enough. That was a big platform, the game at Hampden, wasn't it? And the guys really stepped up to the mark.
Yeah, of course. It's good for the younger 20 boys as well, that the likes of me and Ben are coming through, that there's not a... So they know there's a pathway up them for the first team if they keep it. Actually, for Mother to win Youth Cup, it's massive. It's a massive achievement, obviously, and it's shows how good a 20s team we've got. And obviously, it's not just the Craig's always crashing, lads have done brilliant, but it's not just that's the coaches from under 9s all the way up. They've obviously been doing their job right for producing good players to win the cup at the end of it. So it's been brilliant, and it just shows how what the club's all about, bringing young players through, and hopefully more people can make a breakthrough.
It was quite evident that on that night, if you don't mind me saying, that you were one of the more experienced heads. You looked, even physically, a stronger player than many on the park. How much of a help to your development has been given that chance of playing, or being given a prolonged run in the first team?
Yeah, it's helped out my development a lot. Obviously, I've had to get a bit stronger, a bit more physical, and I think I've tried to do that over the past couple of months, been working a lot with the personal trainer coach, Andy Bowles, so I've been working with him and just trying to get bigger and stronger, and obviously it was good to play 20, back down and play 20s again, but yeah, I felt as if I felt I reaped the benefits from that, and yeah, I really enjoyed it at Hampden.
You mentioned Keith Lasley a wee bit earlier on. The experienced players are basically the backbone of the club, aren't they? They seem to provide a lot of help. I know from watching Ben Hall, you constantly see Stephen McManus in his ear. I would imagine that Keith Lasley's very similar with yourself.
Yeah, even Laz, Piro, Scott McDonald, even Faddy as well, and Mick, and obviously David Clarkson as well, and Hammy as well. They've been absolutely brilliant with the young boys, and even when I was 17, I was even just up with the first team, just maybe because they all needed a body. Mick would always talk to me and tell me not to be nervous then. I just go out and showing the first team players how good you are, and they've always the youngsters, they talk us through it, and I've been brilliant. But it's been a pleasure being alongside Keith Lasley and Imperial. It's been absolutely brilliant. Helped me play through my couple of starts with the first. It's been great.
The team have obviously turned it round as well since your inclusion, and maybe they went hand in hand. Maybe you're the real reason that we're top six and doing as well as we are.
I love that.
But making the top six surpassed the supporters' any of our expectations. We really thought that it was heading towards another struggle at the wrong end of the table. It's been a fantastic turnaround for the team, hasn't it? And to actually be almost sitting here disappointed at missing out in fourth place shows you how far we've come in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it's that's all credit to the coaching staff as well. They've made sure our training's been up to scratch, and all credit to the boys as well. They've been putting the best by extra work in the gym, and also we're reaping the benefits as well. And it's good to play in the top six, the so-called bigger teams. But obviously, we play at Parkhead and Sunday. But yeah, we've turned it around brilliantly, and hopefully we can just keep going. Don't pull out. We can keep going and hopefully get better next season.
You mentioned the Celtic game there. It'll be a bit of a strange experience, I would imagine, going to Celtic Park and basically aiming to spoil the party. But after the excellent result at Dingwall last night, there must be a bit of focus on finishing the season at a real high by derailing the party and showing Celtic exactly what they're up against come next season.
Yeah, because it'll be the party, if you say so. It'll be there'll be a full house there, probably Celtic Park. I don't think there's any pressure on us. I think we can just go out and try and play. I think all the pressure, if they don't turn up, then the fans might go on their back. So there's no pressure on our part. We'll just go out and obviously we've beaten them there before. This season 2-1 we've beat them, so there's no reason why we can't go out and get a result and finish the season on a real high.
I've spoken to Lou Moult earlier on in the week, and he mentioned that the guys were beginning to feel a bit of fatigue. It's been a long season, obviously 38 league games alongside cup, two cup competitions. So there is, I'm sure, a bit of you that's quite looking forward to getting away from football for a couple of weeks and then just recharging the batteries.
Yeah, that's what I would do, just recharge the batteries, maybe go on holiday and that. But I know by Wednesday I'll be bored, sitting in the house bored, and I'll be a kind of bit of season to start again. So that's what it's all like. You kind of look forward to a wee break, but then comes 3 days into the break, can't wait to start playing football again. But no, I think I'll be bored. We'll be looking for the next season actually, and hopefully we can do one better this season.
Well, Louis also said that it would be phenomenal to see England lift the Euro Championships, so well, he's maybe looking forward to the break a wee bit more than you. I think we can all has the manager set any targets ahead of next season? Is it even been discussed? Has the focus been on just finishing this season on a high, and what will be next season? I'm sure that an experienced manager like Mark McGee will regroup and set the targets maybe at a later date.
Yeah, even when we came top six, we had 5 games to go, the gaffer brought us all in and we had meetings about the game. He says, look, this isn't just about this season, obviously we want to finish as high as possible. We also see finishing this season strongly so we can go into next season, because if you think about it, next season is not that really that far away. I think there's an early start, and so it's not really that far away. So talking about maybe finishing this season, that means we'll be going stead for next season. So he's already looking to next season. I really look forward to hopefully we can have a good season again.
There was obviously Alan Campbell made the bench on Saturday and again last night against County. Is there other players that perhaps escaped the attention of the supporters that we should be looking out for, and you believe that they've got a real chance of making it big in 2016-17?
Yeah, I think Alan Campbell's really liked by the club. I think he's a really, really good. He's been really good in the 20s, and what's good for Mullows, he's signed a new 3-year deal, I think he signed, so that's absolutely brilliant, because he's a Keith Lasley type of player. He covers every single blade of grass. He'll make lots of tackles. He's really neat and tidy in the ball, so he's definitely one to look forward to. Also, I think David Ferguson, he's played a few games as well. He's come back a better player, I think. So it'll be good to see where they two can maybe make a breakthrough next season. Hopefully they do, because they're really, really, really good players.
Chris, I'd just like to thank you again for giving up your time so late at night to speak to us.
No bother, mate, and
congratulations on a fantastic season again.
Thank you. Cheers, no bother.
Yes, thanks, mate.
Appreciate it.
We have achieved so much more than you possibly thought we could.